Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
If you've got a green thumb, and by the way, if you do, I know a specialist, you'll really marvel at how simple a tool this is, and it can really save you hours of back-breaking work. Let's see. I'm about 100 yards off the green here. I'll try a five weasel. No more weeding on your hands and knees. You just gently glide your weasel. And by the way, it's been years since I've said that. You just glide the weasel in between your, let's say, plants. Look, Ma, I'm making valuable mulch. Oh. Hello, Mr. Hoffa. The blades are removable for easy cleaning. And the patented tilling action digs deep into the soil and aerates all the way down to the roots. You know, here's something I don't understand. Weasels, aren't they rodents? Why would you name something after a rodent? I mean, think about it. It's not a nice thing. Why not just call it the Amazing Rat Stick?
From the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a Kishka's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program, heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas, wind blowing through breathing trees, strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. To Mike, it's not just another banana peel, it's future dirt. Here he is, Mike Novak.
So does everybody in the room have their protection, your gear? Did you put plastic bags over your heads, please?
I'm not afraid of you.
Oh, you should be.
No. In fact, at the end of the show, I'm going to give you a hug.
Oh, and I'm going to cough.
Poor Mike has been sick, sick as a dog.
Oh, and I guess Dick Kay was yesterday, too. I caught a little bit of the show, and I said, wait a second, he sounds like me. What's going on here?
Yeah, I'm
going
to stay away from that microphone. You are not afraid.
I think it's a really good idea. Now, we've got the little packets here, the WCPT AM and FM cleaning solution packets that just happen to look like condoms that we give out at all of our events, which I'm not sure what the message is.
But. I'm speechless, Mike, but I do feel safe because I'm in a completely
That's right.
different room.
Carol's in the booth. You are in the booth.
So I'm good.
Now, we got the Lysol here. Just wipe everything down. I hate being sick in a, I hate being sick anytime. I just hate it anytime. It is no fun. And it is, you just kind of deal with it, I guess. You know, although it's not stopping me. I'm going out and doing whatever I got to do. And that means coming in here. Because I only do this once a week. It's not like, You know, I'm doing this 5 days a week, and I could just take a couple of days off and turn it over to somebody.
You know, the one day that we stood in for you, I was exhausted that week. I cannot imagine broadcasters who are doing five-day-a-week shows.
I can't either.
The amount of work. I mean, they must have people.
Well, of course they've got people. You don't do five days a week unless you've got people.
But just the amount of work that people, you do for this.
You know, and of course my people here are part-time. So, mm-hmm. as a matter of fact... what I need to do, let's see, wait a second, hold on, because I did this last week, and here we are. Let's just bring it down here. And if we did the
Mouseketeers roll call, count off now.
Carol!
Here.
Lisa!
I'm here.
Johnny!
No. Rob!
Here.
No.
Rob is texting with me right now.
Rob! He's not here. Rob. Sarah!
Darn.
I'm getting all the... Darlene! No, she's not here either.
Poor Darlene. We miss Darlene.
We do?
Didn't she die this year?
That was Annette.
Oh.
Wow, come on. You should know better. Annette was the famous one. Nobody cared about Darlene. Give me a break.
Darlene was cute.
Rob
is texting with me right now.
And what's he say?
Well, he said he's not texting with you because you probably didn't turn your ringer off. but he just said, have a great show this morning.
Totally busted. No, I didn't turn it off.
See? He knows you well.
Yeah, he does. But I have it's a more silent ringer. Anyway.
With your fancy new phone.
And I'm sorry I'm sniffing, so I apologize. You're going to hear a lot of that today, and just deal with it. Jam-packed show, so let's get rolling. We have Theo Watanabe, who's going to be with us to start the show, and Debbie Becker. Now, they're going to be talking about bees. And I mentioned on the show the other day that in a couple of weeks, I'm going to have University of Illinois entomologist May Barenbaum and some other folks on the show to talk about the plight of our pollinators, whether it be Apis mellifera, which is the honeybee, or other native pollinators, because honeybees are not native, in case you didn't know. They are not native to this neck of the woods or this part of the world, but we do use them. And of course, as you know, because of colony collapse disorder, whatever that means, and a lot of people think it has to do with a consistent use of pesticides, which is, and I saw a report just this past week that says that perhaps the parasites that attack bees are able to do that because bees are weakened by the pesticides. Which wouldn't surprise me one little bit. And that same report mentioned that fungicides, which we've always assumed were not at all harmful to bees, may indeed be harmful to bees and may be contributing to this. Well, what I say is big fat duh. We throw all these chemicals. Bees, I've talked to May Barenbaum before, and she says bees are just not prepared. They have apparently half the genes necessary to fend off those kinds of chemicals, half the genes of many other insects. And I don't know why that is, but I'll ask her about it when she's on the show. I believe she's on in 2 weeks, on the 11th of August. But then to find out that, it might be some of the fungicides we're putting down too, and the insecticides. And when I say pesticides, I mean it all encompassing. Insecticides, fungicides, herbicides. I put them all under the label pesticides. And a lot of people do that. But, so it's interesting that the bees are under attack and our top story, the 9 a.m. story today is about the village of Skokie, which is considering a bee ordinance, an ordinance that would regulate or perhaps even ban honeybees in the village. Now, Evanston has gone down this road in the last several years. Oak Park, in fact, Debbie Becker, who's going to be with us in just a second, has dealt with that, and we'll get to that in just a second. So we'll talk about that issue. Rick DeMeyer, weather, 9:45, as always. In the second hour, Metropolitan Water Reclamation District Commissioner Deborah Shore, who is a regular on this show, if you consider once a year regular, it's better than a lot of people, will be on to talk about a proposed watershed management ordinance, and she explains some things that are kind of interesting, what a 100-year storm really means. I didn't know it, and I was surprised that it's different from what you might think it is. And she will be here to talk about a proposed watershed management ordinance for Cook County so we can catch up with places like DuPage County and Lake County, who have had these on the books for a couple of decades. Gosh, it's so surprising that Cook County is behind the times. And then at the end of the second hour, more on Starved Rock. Now, I haven't talked about Starved Rock in a little bit, but I found out this week that Ashley Williams, who's a citizen of Ottawa, just down the road a piece from Starved Rock State Park, is going to be delivering a bunch of petitions to Governor Quinn's office to help stop the Mississippi sand frack mine outside the eastern entrance of Starved Rock State Park. That litigation goes on, in case you're wondering. And why you haven't heard anything, it's what litigation does. It just proceeds to the court slowly.
Drags.
But that's good.
Every day, slow things down.
I love it.
Yep.
Every day drags on is another day that they're not digging a pit over there. Although I suspect, and maybe we'll find out from Ashley, whether they're doing the prep. You know, they've probably stripped away all the vegetation, put up the chain link fences and all that. Who knows? I haven't been out there, so I can't tell you. And maybe some other folks out that way will call in and tell us, 773-763-9278. But Ashley Williams started a MoveOn.org petition, and she's already got 16,000 signatures on it. I signed it yesterday. You can go to my website, MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show, and if you scroll down to where it says, "The Starved Rock Battle Continues, Petition Governor Quinn," there's a link to the petition, which is called "Governor Quinn, Stop the Mississippi Sand Frack Sand Mine Near Starved Rock." And, you know, even though the litigation is going on, seems to me the governor should step up. Haven't heard a whisper out of the governor's office, which is very disappointing because he's supposed to be the environmental governor. Well, this one seems like a no-brainer. At least to me. But maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? All that on the show today. Oh, and by the way, we're going to give away 2 tickets to the Southeast Environmental Task Force's latest tour coming up on August 10th called Down in the Dumps.
Oh, my God. They have another tour.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I got it right here.
People who didn't listen, a couple weeks ago, I took the Southeast Environmental Task Force Eco Tour, where we went around and saw clean and dirty sources of energy. And I got to tell you, these guys put together amazing things. So if you're sick of just reading about things and you want to experience it, see it up front, the way I described it before was they connect the dots. They take what you hear and put it into reality. And it was a life-changing day for me.
Yep.
It's good stuff.
And SETF will tour the municipal waste operations on the southeast side, believe it or not. Yep. You'll learn how Chicago deals with garbage, sewage, and waste treatment in general. And it's a narrated tour. And it looks like I'm going to be on it. At least if I'm feeling up to it, if I ever get better,
yeah,
I'm definitely going to be there. I'm going to be there. And that's August 10th, and we will give away 2 tickets today. And if you want more information on that, go to my website, MikeNovak.net, and where it says I'm giving away 2 tickets to the SETF Down in the Dumps tour. And you can get a link to the tour if you want to actually purchase a ticket, which is $35, includes a lunch at a local establishment. It's all on a bus, so it's nice. It's all comfy, right? You were on the tour.
It was exceptionally well run.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you while you're drinking your power shake there.
Sorry.
It's only a radio show.
I did turn my mic off.
It's only a radio show. Never mind. You got a power shake in there, Carol?
Sort of. I've got some green tea. That is my power
shake. That's your power shake.
Yep.
I've got my chamomile tea, or chamomile, as some people say. All right, let us go to the telephone lines and bring in Theo Watanabe, actually. Theo, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Good morning. How are you?
All right. Well, no, not so much. All right. I'm hanging in there. But I'm glad to have you on the show today. Let's also bring in Debbie Becker. Debbie, good morning.
Good morning.
Great to have both of you on the show, because both of you have been down this road together. Not necessarily together, at separate times, but you've been down the same road, kind of. And we'll explain that in a second. Theo, I want you to start at the beginning for me, how this all began to develop in the village of Skokie. I understand you're a beekeeper, correct?
I'm a new beekeeper this year. I've been a lifelong passionate gardener, and I had thought about keeping bees probably 20 years ago, but shelved it because I had a neighbor who was, I mentioned it to her, and she said no. She was afraid of bees, and she was a very good neighbor, and I respected that. And over the years, just things happened, and I got back interested in it about a year or so ago and started reading up on bees. And as you know, I'm sure, Mike, the more you read about bees, the more fascinated you become. They are just so amazing.
Absolutely.
And, yeah. We could learn a lot from bees. Let's just put it that way. And so I decided that this year I would start a bee colony, and I contacted the village of Skokie and was told at this time there are no laws against keeping bees in Skokie. And I went ahead and invested, the money that it takes to start beekeeping, and took some courses and read a lot of books and got my equipment together. And this spring got my package bees from Tennessee.
Can I stop you for a second there?
Sure.
Two questions. First of all, when you say the costs associated with it, are they significant or not?
Well, it's more than $500 and less than $1,000. Let's put it that way.
All right. And why did you get bees from Tennessee?
I got something called survivor bees, and they're also small cell bees. These are sort of more natural bees. They're not raised by the commercial beekeepers in the South that use the bees for pollination.
Mm-hmm.
And these haven't been treated with myriad chemicals and drugs.
How do you vet that? I mean, they tell you that how is it that they are not affected by pesticides and chemicals when we know that
these are not treated by the beekeepers.
Oh, I see what you mean.
They raise the bees. They raise them with essential oils and other natural products. So I wanted to start out with this kind of bee. And I also started out without wax foundation because all the wax out there is contaminated. It's recycled wax from other beekeepers. And so I wanted to start kind of a nice natural hive in Skokie. And then once I got my bees set up, the village came to me and said, bees are illegal. And I said, same laws on the books as last year. What's changed? Oh, we're interpreting them differently. So anyhow, this started a little tug of war with Skokie. And Skokie now has said that they intend to make beekeeping illegal. And we are trying to at least enlighten them a little to at least examine the issue and hopefully get backyard beekeeping legal. Maybe, and definitely with regulations, it should be regulated. Anything that has effects on your neighbors or risks involved, like having a dog or having a pool in your backyard, there's regulations around it, and that's how it should be.
Sure. I almost as, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but I did put on my website, because I know people are, there's a lot of people in the world who are deathly afraid of bees, okay? And they're deathly afraid of spiders, and they're deathly afraid of snakes, and they're deathly afraid of pretty much anything that crawls or creeps. And
well, why should we let our childhood fears regulate policy?
Absolutely. And what I did is I did a little research,
and Kathleen helped me with this. And let me just read you this list. If you're afraid of bees and you're afraid that you're going to get stung and die, you are more likely to be killed by lightning strikes, tornadoes, legal execution, air travel accidents, electrocution, and what we're talking about there is not in the electric chair, but, you know, by putting the wrong plug in the wrong place kind of thing, a bicycle accident, guns, well, that's a big fat duh, falling down, falling off a ladder, or inhaling your food. That all, you're more likely to die from all of those things than from being stung by a bee. Okay.
And Mike, I did similar research, and actually, you're more likely to be killed by a dog attack or die in a swimming pool. Things that we have around us every day, but yet we have 69 million dogs in the United States.
Yeah, and drowning is a huge, you know, whether it's in a swimming pool, but or someplace else, it's a you know, it accounts for a lot of deaths. So there you go. That's just sort of to put things in perspective. Now, I'm kind of interested because you said the city came to you, and obviously some kind of inspector came, walked, knocked on your door, and said, "Hey, do you have bees back there?" Or how did that play out?
Animal control came.
Okay.
And gave me a order to get rid of my bees.
They randomly came by, or do you have a feeling that somebody may have picked up the phone and made a phone call?
Oh, somebody did.
Yeah, that's the way those things work, generally. Somebody had to know they were behind there. They weren't bothering anybody. Nobody's been stung, I assume.
No, not even me.
Yeah, okay. And you're the one who keeps the bees.
Right.
And by the way, let's make that point right now, which is that honeybees are docile in general, unless threatened. They really are not interested in you unless you're messing with them.
Or you're a flower.
Right, but they don't sting flowers.
No, no.
They will
sting to defend their hive.
And, you know, that's the other thing. When we talked just a second ago about people being killed each year by bee stings, I have to use bee in quotes because the folks who do these kinds of surveys don't differentiate between bees and paper wasps and yellow jackets and hornets. They lump them all together. So,
and I have seen the statistic that 50% of all stings are done by yellow jackets alone.
That wouldn't surprise me one little bit. So,
because they go after our food, you know, at picnics, and they're ever present in the garden, and they can sting with impunity, whereas a honeybee dies when they sting. So they do it judiciously.
Yeah. They do it because they can. All right. So you had the city come to you and they said you have to get rid of that. And you said, what law? And they told you that there was a law or there wasn't a law?
Well, they reinterpreted the existing law and said that bees were livestock.
So there's no livestock. And so, wow, that's kind of stretching the definition of livestock, isn't it?
Yeah, I did some research, and under federal law and Illinois state law, bees are not considered livestock.
Okay, there you go. So under Illinois state laws, which means that they had to consider this. So from what I understand, there was a hearing the other week. And
it was actually a Board of Trustees meeting.
Okay, a Board of Trustees meeting.
Where they brought up the proposal to... amongst another, a bunch of laws, laws about vicious animals and things like that.
Right.
They wanted to add a law excluding bees in Skokie.
And I understand that a number of people who feel positively about bees testified.
Yes, they did, and very articulately. And I really believe it's a matter of education because the general public, including our trustees, seem to think that any striped flying insect is a bee, when in fact there's a huge range of insects that act very differently. And honeybees, of all the bees, are the most docile, being domesticated for the last 4,000 years by man. And so they need, you know, people need to sort of understand that you can't paint this with a broad brush.
What I was kind of fascinated by was the director of the Skokie Health Department, who, as I wrote on my website, was less than enthusiastic about beekeeping. and said so in her remarks at the board meeting.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, how would you characterize her statements?
Well, kind of fear-based and kind of not fact-based. I would prefer to see my laws based on facts, not fears. She was concerned for people with bee sting allergies, but of all, you know, again, there are no statistics on how many people have bee sting allergies. There is a range for insect sting allergies, but of course, honeybees are, again, a portion of that. So she was saying that up to 5,000 people could be impacted with their sting allergies. However, what's the chance of getting stung by a honeybee? Unless you're sticking your hand in my hive or something.
Yeah.
And even I stick my hand in my hive and I don't get stung.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it has to be an aggressive move against the hive where they perceive a threat. Out in the field, unless you swat any insect, they're not going to sting you usually.
So what's the next step here?
We're waiting to see what the actual proposed ordinance, how it shapes up, whether it's going to be allowing beekeeping in Skokie or not allowing it or allowing it in some form. They talked about a community bee yard, which is one possibility. That's what Schaumburg and Hanover Park did.
And what would that be? Is that there would be a designated area and anybody who's interested in beekeeping, kind of like a community garden, you would have community bees?
It would be your bees in a fenced enclosure on village property or municipal property where only the beekeepers have the keys to the lock.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, especially for beginner beekeepers, you need to observe your bees very regularly to see what they're doing so you can adjust how you take care of them. Right, Debbie?
Yeah, that's correct.
Oh, and I'm glad you did that. I wanted to bring in Debbie. By the way, we're talking to Theo Watanabe and Debbie.
Watanabe.
I'm sorry, Watanabe. Jeez. I'm so sorry. It's a difficult name for me. Watanabe.
I know, it comes with the name.
Yeah, well, I know. And I think I have problems with Novak. Okay, Watanabe. At least I spelled it right. And Debbie Becker, who Debbie's from Oak Park, and Theo is in Skokie, as we just said. And Debbie, you went through this a couple of years ago in the city of Oak Park.
Yes, that's right, starting in 2009.
Okay. Tell me about that situation.
Well, I became a beekeeper, a volunteer beekeeper at Garfield Park Conservatory, and I grew to love it, and I wanted to have hives in my backyard for the very reason that Theo said, that you want to keep an eye on them when you're starting out. And I found out that it was not allowed here. I think it was that livestock thing, too. I forget. It's been a while, so I forget. But so I approached the village Department of Health, and they were completely astounded that it was illegal here. And they did tons of research. They really educated themselves. I was really impressed because they were kind of against beekeeping at the beginning, and they were very enthusiastic by the end.
Mm-hmm.
But the village board didn't think it was a very pressing issue, and it ended up taking 2 years for it to finally be approved.
Wow. And in the meantime, were you not able to have bees, or did they allow you to keep your hives?
Oh, I didn't even ask. I just figured I would wait until it was clear. But one of the things I really wanted, since I was so impressed with the program that they have at Garfield Park, I wanted the public buildings here to be able to have bees, and that the only way to do that was to get it legalized, because there's an Oak Park Conservatory, and I'd like to see them have bees, and I'd also mm-hmm. like to have observation hives in the schools.
Mm-hmm. And so they finally did pass an ordinance, and when was that, 2011?
Yes.
And you wrote to me last night and sent me some of the restrictions.
Right. There are a lot of hoops to jump through.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that, as I characterize it, it's be careful what you wish for.
Well, there is a problem of having administrators write laws for a specialized group with no knowledge of the beekeeping practices or best practices. So they throw in everything but the kitchen sink, you know, just to make it as safe as possible. But they also exclude, you know, certain kinds of beekeepers. I saw on the Oak Park ordinance that it is only, they only allow Langstroth hives.
That's
is that right,
correct.
Debbie?
All right,
yeah.
Now you need to explain what that is.
There are, there are various kinds of beehives that people use. Bees were impractical to keep until a reverend in the 1850s developed frames that you could remove. Remember the straw bee skeps, the ones that look like a mound that you've
right.
seen in traditional pictures? Well, you can't remove the honey or the wax or anything without destroying everything inside the hive in those kinds of hives. So this Reverend Langstroth invented removable frames where the bees build their honeycomb inside these these wood frames, and you can take them out and you know, move them around and do things with them, put them back, you know, take out the honey, put it back, leave the honeycomb. And so there's a number of different kinds of hives, shapes of hives, that use this format. And to just say that having removable frames, which is the law in the land anyways in Illinois, would have been enough. But to say Langstroth, which is the vertical, the traditional stacked beehive of wooden boxes that are stacked, that's one of the kinds, is a Langstroth hive.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also horizontal hives, which people say mimic a fallen tree environment for bees.
Ah, so, it's, and by the way, that's spelled L-A-N-G-S-T-R-O-T-H, Langstroth.
Correct.
And it's what people think of when they think of the stacked hives, but as you pointed out, there are other kinds. So what other kinds of restrictions did you have in Oak Park, Debbie?
Well, I had to put up a lot of fencing, 6-foot and 5-foot fencing, and that was pretty pricey.
Well, and as you know, bees can't fly any higher than 6 feet.
And that was one of the things I wanted to ask about, because I see here on MikeNovak.net where it talks about the flyaway barrier. Is a bee, and even if, you know, you have an ordinance in Skokie, come on, the bee's going to listen to this ordinance. But I don't understand how that changes anything. I mean, does it create a barrier?
Well, they want the bees to fly up and not straight into somebody's yard. So once they start going up, they'll keep going up and not head next door.
It's a bee super highway.
It takes them above the pedestrian level, and that's a very smart thing to do anyways.
Okay. All right. So I'm duly chastised for my comments. You had to have water on the property. Well, that makes sense because bees need water source. You have to have inspection of the bee yard by a health department worker. You got to be registered with the State Department of Agriculture. Is that the case in a lot of municipalities?
It's required by the state that you register your hives.
Okay, so that was already the case.
Mm-hmm.
A latch gate with a sign stating warning beehives on property. In terms of Oak Park, as you told me, Debbie, the village now maintains a registry of people who have proven, with a doctor's note, that they have bee sting allergies. Beehives may not be established within 150 feet of any resident who has registered for the list. How many people have registered?
Last I heard, just a couple.
Yeah.
I want to bring up the point that many people don't really have bee sting allergies but think they do. It is a normal reaction when you get stung by a stinging insect of any sort to have swelling. And sometimes, I mean, like, I've had a wasp sting where my whole hand swelled up. I got stung on a finger. And people assume that's an allergy, but it is not the case.
All right, I have to bring up one thing. Now, this is my own pet peeve. All right. And again, we're talking to Theo Watanabe. I got it right this time, didn't I?
10 points.
All right. Ding, ding. Wait, where's my bell? I need, there we go. And she's from the village of Skokie and a wannabe beekeeper.
Not a wannabe. I've got a hive of girls out there.
Okay, well, then you got them. Okay, a beekeeper who's trying to keep them. Let's put it that way. And Debbie Becker from Oak Park. What is it with the media when it comes to stories about bees where they suddenly become idiots and insipid in their coverage of it? Because I look at the headlines, like this one story covering the Skokie issue. Headline, beekeepers feel sting of possible village ban. The first line is to be or not to be.
There are so many puns that you can make around bees.
I'll bet those people sat up all night just trying to come up with that. What is it that reduces your IQ by 50 or 60 points if you're just writing about bees? And the reason I say that is because it trivializes the issue. It seems to me.
I think it reflects on the writer, not the story.
But they all do it, Theo.
It's so easy.
I think that's it.
It's low-hanging fruit.
It's low-hanging fruit, and you look like an idiot when you do that.
Oh, I think they think they look cute, though.
Oh, yeah. If you're in my shoes and you were prepping for this story yesterday and reading all the headlines and they all sound the same because they all have those stupid little puns in them, you get annoyed at a certain point and just say, would you just please deal with the issue? This is important. Bees are pollinators. They're dying. We people are trying to raise bees and do some good for the environment. Stop making light of it, because what happens is the people who read the stories think of it as a lighter subject. It's some fluff thing, you know.
Sure.
You wouldn't do that about guns. I can think of all kinds of puns you can make about people who get shy.
Well, unfortunately, I don't think that people stop to sit back and think about the danger in society if we lose our bees. There are so many, Theo said it's an education issue, and I think it's an education issue not just on, you know, the safety of bees and how we can keep them, but the necessity of bees. And I don't know that people find a bug and realize that it's necessary for our survival.
Anyway, I had to get that off my chest. Simply because, as I said, I spent some time working on this yesterday, and I got really, really annoyed by everybody. And everybody did it. And from WTTW to the Skokie newspapers to just on and on. It was just amazing. So if people want to get involved with the Skokie issue, do you want them to, Theo? How do you want to handle this?
Well, I know that Skokie prefers to hear from Skokie residents. I mean, that's how they exclude other voices, as they say, you know, well, they're not from Skokie. But if anyone wants to contact me for information or in support, my email address, can I give that?
Sure.
Is bees@infosquid.com. That's bees, like in honeybees, @infosquid, which is infosquid.com.
And we will post that on Facebook and Twitter so that people know how to contact you, because I'm sure there are people who are listening to this and are interested in the subject and would like to help, even people who don't live in Skokie. Debbie, have you got any final words on this?
I think Theo's done an excellent job of covering it.
Speaking as somebody who's, like I said, been down the road before.
Right. I wish Theo all the best in her quest, and I think that she'll eventually come out on top.
Well, I want to thank you I want to thank you both for being on the show today, and I appreciate you taking some time. Theo Watanabe, which, see, now it only takes me once to, I got to say it a couple of times before I get it right. And Debbie Becker and Theo, keep me posted, all right? Because I want people to know what happens here.
And did I hear you say that Deborah Shore is going to be on later?
Yes.
She's a friend of Skokie Bees as well.
Well, then I will ask her a question about this as well.
Good for you. Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, both of you. Have a great Sunday.
Thanks,
Mike.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And here's a tip from the care of trees. Fall can be a good time to plant many species of trees. And now, even though it feels like fall, it's still summer. What are you going to be doing? Are you going to go to the beach?
I don't know. I'm so overcommitted. I have so many deadlines. I should go home and be responsible. But I really want to go to the beach. It's nice outside.
It's going to be like low 70s.
That's perfect.
Then I guess. And with the wind off the lake.
That's beautiful. Beach weather.
All right. As long as you approve, then everything's fine. And now's the time to plan for your tree planting in the fall. Northern Illinois is in USDA hardiness zone 5, so we need to look for trees that are hardy to zone 5 or colder. If you are buying from the internet or via mail order, check the cold hardiness of the tree. You know, that's the problem. If you buy it locally, often that's taken care of, although you should ask where the tree was grown. That's not a bad question. Consider the conditions of the planting site. What type of drainage and soil moisture are present at the site? Is compaction a problem? What is the soil pH? Usually in this area, we are dealing with alkaline soils, but some people within the sound of my voice have acidic soils. You need to know what your pH is. How much sun or shade does the location receive? Try to find a tree species that will be able to grow well within the conditions at your planting site. Talk to a certified arborist at The Care of Trees. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Make this your best gardening season yet. Hi, I'm Melinda Myers, horticulturist and gardening expert. Invest a bit of time now to ensure a bountiful harvest and beautiful landscape throughout the season. And let Milorganite, an eco-friendly, all-purpose fertilizer, help you accomplish your gardening goals. Start by adding several inches of organic matter to the top 6 to 12 inches of soil. Peat moss, compost, and other organic materials improve drainage in heavy clay soil and increase the water-holding ability of sandy soils. Incorporate Milorganite organic nitrogen fertilizer into all your planting beds. The low nitrogen formula makes it goof-proof so you won't harm young, tender plants. The slow-release formula provides small amounts of fertilizer over time, encouraging overall growth without preventing flowering and fruiting. And properly prepared soil will help your plantings better survive the heat, drought, and pest attacks of summer. So choose Milorganite for better results naturally. Visit Milorganite.com to find a store near you.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545, or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish Chicago's only local magazine dedicated to healthy and sustainable living. Natural Awakenings is available monthly, and we provide the latest news and trends about healthful living, including alternative and complementary medicine, fitness, good food and drink, healthy kids and families, and even healthy pets. Natural Awakenings also talks about local sustainability, gardening and environment, energy conservation, and green living. We feature local news and a calendar to help you stay connected. I can guarantee that each month you'll discover a new health tip, a tasty recipe, a service in your neighborhood, something that makes your life better. Natural Awakenings is free and available throughout the city and suburbs or online at nachicagonorth.com. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run. Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father, run for your children, for your sisters and brothers. Leave all your loving behind. You can't carry it with you if you want to survive. The dog days are over.
I guess they are. If the dog days are, I thought we were just getting into the dog days. Let's go to Rick DeMaio and find out what the case is. How are you, Rick?
I'm doing fine, Mike. Did we get another week out of growing tomatoes this summer season with this cool weather?
You know what? They'll continue to grow. They might not be as happy as they'd like to be with 85 degree temperatures, but.
Yeah, I guess that. I'm just looking from a standpoint of it seems like it's a refrigerator out there. And
comparatively, yeah. What are these, like April, May temperatures?
Yeah, I guess it depends on which direction you go, either backwards into, it's pretty much about the middle of, the middle of April, because the normal high for the 30th of April is right around 69, and we topped that at 65, which not broke, but literally obliterated the previous record cold high, which was 69 degrees. And actually, the interesting thing about it, Mike, is most of those, cold high temperatures set back for this date, which was the 27th of July, was when the Weather Service had their weather site, in downtown Chicago. And typically you associate, cooler winds off the lake, keeping downtown cool with the lake water temperature, kind of a chilly 60 to 65 degrees. But this was at O'Hare Field, and this was with a northwest wind. This was kind of the opposite of what you'd expect the flow to be to bring cooler air into our particular area. But it did, and not only did it break the record, but as I mentioned, by 4 degrees. When you break a record by 4 degrees, that's pretty much pushing the limits of climatic norm from a standpoint of the oddity of weather. We keep seeing these extremes over and over again.
Well, and what? Give me your standard line when people are going to come up to you and say, "Hey, where's your global warming now?"
Well, I take global warming out of the picture. I look at it more as a climate change pattern. And again, when you look at where this air came from, it basically originated over Hudson's Bay, which has been unusually cold through late summer, or as I should say, through late spring and through much of the early summer. In fact, even the last day or last waning days of June, parts of James Bay, which is that southern tip of Hudson's Bay, and even north central part of Hudson Bay, was still frozen over. And, areas of western Lake Superior were still in the mid to upper 40s. Even though Lake Michigan has warmed up, this air didn't come down Lake Michigan. It actually kind of backed up from Hudson's Bay, and it almost moved kind of southwestward over southern Ontario, northern Wisconsin, northern Minnesota, and kind of made a little bit of a left turn, and then moved south and southeastward into northern Illinois. So this air mass didn't really come over Lake Michigan, which is what you would normally associate cool air masses with this time of the year. It came basically from the north and west, an extremely unusual pattern. And in addition to that, we're not the only ones under, kind of weird conditions. I was looking at the weather in Phoenix, Arizona this past week. Not only have they been in their monsoon, but Mike, I have never seen it this humid before in the desert southwest. Early this week, Phoenix had dew points, get this, in the low to mid 70s. You're talking 73, 74 dew points. Afton highs were close to 100. Dew points were in the mid to upper 60s. They were complaining about heat index values of 110 out there. And think about that. You have a community which normally relies on air conditioning to keep you cool, obviously during the day, but I'm sure those air conditioning units are probably running 24/7. And then you have communities like Atlanta, Georgia, which typically has about 15 days of 90 degree weather for the month of July, has had only two, yet Boston, Massachusetts has had 11 days above 90 this month. So it's been very, very strange. It's almost like the entire pattern has kind of flipped itself a little bit.
That is odd, isn't it? And to what do you attribute these odd patterns?
Well, part of it, again, is this what we call this meridional flow. We talk about zonal flow and meridional flow. Zonal flow basically means that the weather generally runs from west to east. Typically, when you get into your late spring season and you begin to get this jet stream pattern that was over the mid-latitudes begin to kind of retreat northward somewhat, it didn't really do so in that normal pattern. And I still look at the pattern right now, and it really is the same pattern that we've been in, minus a couple of, ebbs and flows here and there, really since late February. And if you take the winter season out of it, it's almost the same pattern that we were in kind of like at the end of summer, early fall last year, which obviously led to this very, what we call a high amplitude trough ridge pattern. And what that does is two things. It keeps certain weather regimes in their place for an unusually long period of time. We've talked about this a number of times. We had a very, very high amplitude pattern, very warm pockets of air in the upper latitude, generally between, I'd say, about 50 degrees and about 70 degrees latitude. Those pockets of warm air could do two things. They can keep you in either a very cool, wet pattern or keep you in a very warm, dry pattern. What it did for us in late September and October was it actually took what was Hurricane Sandy, made it into this megastorm, and pushed it westward. We've never seen that before. Now we've had the same thing when we got into the late, we'll talk about it somewhat from like a late winter into spring, early summer. We still had these very high blocking patterns, which never really allowed this push of westerly flow. We kept getting these big areas of high pressure developed over Hudson Bay and over the Great Lakes, which kept us not only cool and cloudy, but kept the Great Lakes cool. And it's almost like you just kept the refrigerator door closed for a longer period of time. And, you know, soon enough, each time you open it up, it's going to be fairly cool. That's one of the reasons why we had such a cool spring. So we really have never left that pattern. My only concern is that we continue to have these easterly winds blowing all the way from the Caribbean into the northern Gulf of Mexico, into the desert southwest. That's one of the reasons why they've been in somewhat of a extended monsoon. But you heard about Tropical Storm Dorian that kind of developed very quickly off the west coast of Africa. It got up to about 60 miles an hour, but it didn't really have enough oomph in it to really keep it going into the Caribbean. The pattern that we're under right now is very, very much similar to what we saw around here in 2005, where anything that develops in the Caribbean or the Western Atlantic is just going to take a beeline right towards the southeast United States and right into the Gulf of Mexico. So while we haven't had much activity from a tropical standpoint in those particular regions, as soon as we begin to get those areas active, it's going to be like one right after the other. That's the one thing that I'm concerned about.
You know, I'm glad you went there because that was going to be my question, because it's been kind of a quiet hurricane season so far. And as you pointed out, it tends to ramp up.
Is. July just doesn't really give us a lot of tropical storms. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Yeah. So, you know, here we are. Here we've got this cool weather. And what do you see the pattern breaking at all in the near future?
You know what? It doesn't ever really break. It just nudges northward a little bit. We do see the cooler weather continuing probably for the next couple of days, probably into about maybe Wednesday before we begin the warm-up. But, you know, oddly enough, we're going to finish up the month of July, and really we're now two-thirds of the way through summer 2013 with 6 days above 90. Whereas this time last year, we were close to 40 days above 90, and there were some places around the area that had less than an inch of rain. And oddly enough, Mike, we've been in somewhat of a dry pattern. You've noticed particularly the public. I always look at the public areas that don't do the normal watering Monday, Wednesday, Friday. The grass is getting a little dry around here, mainly because we had that hot pattern, you know, about a week and a half ago. That'll probably go down a little bit because of the cooler weather somewhat. So we'll probably have a return to some greener lawns. But other than that, from a standpoint of getting back into warmer weather, getting back into more humid weather, maybe the 3rd, maybe the 4th of August, we may see a couple of days maybe nudge back into the 90s. But right now, it doesn't seem like it's anything of any huge consequence from a standpoint of high heat index values, extended period of drought, high rates of evaporation. But what we do see happening in this particular pattern, and I still look back at 2005, that was one of those summers that got warm late and stayed warm all the way into September and October. It had a very, very high rate of tropical storm activity, which I really like to look at as your peak activities, generally between about the 10th and about the 15th of September. So we're still a long ways away. Not that we want it. It's just an observation of what we're seeing. So bottom line, most likely near to below normal temperatures, probably the next couple of days, and then a slow increase to warmer weather. But still, there's nothing really hot out there. All the real hot weather is basically still west of the Continental Divide. You want warm weather, you're going to eastern Washington and southern areas of British Columbia. And they're routinely getting into the mid to upper 90s, even close to 100 degrees, which is about 10 degrees above normal, even for them.
Wow. So there we go. It's it ain't, you know, there's no such thing as normal weather, as what we've discovered.
No. And I've yet to read my American Meteorological Society State of the Climate Bulletin, because I want to get all my P's and Q's kind of in place. And you kind of want to do your own research before you kind of look at this stuff and go, yeah, I think I understand what they're really talking about. Because this is really highbrow stuff. But it does make an interesting read, without a doubt. So bottom line, like forecast in detail, kind of mostly cloudy day today. We'll probably make it up to about 72 or 73. Again, normal high is 84. And again, we were pretty much 19 degrees below average yesterday. Broke the record, coldest July 27th ever. Beautiful day tomorrow, mostly sunny skies. We'll probably get close to about 78 or so, and we'll probably stay in generally the lower 80s for Tuesday and Wednesday before some heat returns by the end of the week, but still generally moderate heat with temperatures generally upper 80s, close to 90 degrees, just what we need to have a lot of sweaty kids in Grand Park for Lollapalooza, right?
Yeah, I agree. All right, Mr. DeMaio, thank you so much. Always a pleasure hearing from you, and we'll talk again next week.
Take care, Mike.
All right, bye-bye. All right, we need to give away a couple of tickets to the Down in the Dumps tour. I think what we'll do is ask a question. And actually, Tom Shepard from the Southeast Environmental Task Force suggested this in the email he sent me. Within 200... how many plastic bags from Chicago retailers are dispensed each minute in the city? And I don't care if people answer it on Facebook or Twitter or call in 773-763-9278. It's got to be within 200. How many plastic bags from Chicago retailers are dispensed each minute in the city? And if you answer that correctly, you will get two tickets to the Down in the Dumps tour. Now, you got to want to do this August 10th. 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Don't win just for the sake of winning. You really got to be interested in this, because the Tribune described, well, when the Tribune wrote about this tour, they said, this tour stinks, meaning literally, because it can. But it is fascinating. It's fascinating stuff. I mean, if you want to know, see, and everybody needs to know this. They need to know that you don't throw stuff away. There's no such thing as a way. This is a way. When you see where the stuff goes, now you know what you're doing, and it'll change your life. You will not be so la-di-da about the stuff that you throw away once you go on a tour like this. How many plastic bags from Chicago retailers are dispensed each minute in the city? Give us a guess within 200, and I will get you a couple of tickets to the Down in the Dumps tour. In the second hour, we got a call from the beekeeper at Garfield Park Conservatory. We'll do that real quick, and then, of course, MWRD Commissioner Deborah Shore. So I hope all of you stick around.
Your Sunday home for the Mike Novak Show. Tavis Smiley and Smiley and West. Uncommon Law with Kurt Muller. The Family Meeting, Ring of Fire, and Both Sides Now. This is 820 AM WCPT Willow Springs. 92.7 WCPT FM Arlington Heights. 92.5 WCPY DeKalb. And 99.9 FM WCPQ Park Forest. This is Chicago's Progressive Talk.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Get out. I'm sorry. It's just... you know, just putting on my...
You're pushing through.
Yeah. My faces and Rod Stewart persona there, which if I'm going to dye my hair... I don't have to dye my hair blonde anymore. I did once. Did you know that?
Dyed it blonde?
I went platinum back when I had brown hair.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. There's about three. I call it my Billy Idol phase.
Oh, boy.
I was as scary as they come. Do you know what it's like to have platinum blonde hair? It didn't go platinum. They couldn't do it. I mean, they did it in two treatments. First treatment nearly burned my scalp off. I mean, it was just ridiculous. And then it turned out this brassy gold. So they had to go back in. And I was doing it for a show, for a role I was doing. And then they went back again. And then it turns out I had it for about a month. Didn't even have time for the roots to grow out because I had to do another show. So I had to cover it up because I had to go back to dark hair. It's like, what you women put up with. And men, because a lot of men get their hair wrong.
True.
All right. The contest again. If you want two tickets to the Down in the Dumps tour, you need to tell me within 200 how many plastic bags from Chicago retailers are dispensed each minute in the city. You can call us at 773-763-9278. You can tweet us at Mike Now, or you can post on The Mike Novak Show on Facebook, and we'd be happy to give away a couple of those tickets. And I'm going to go right now to Deborah Shore, Commissioner of the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District. Deborah, how are you?
Good morning, Mike. It's great to be with you today.
It's great to be with you. Now, I wanted to get you, I don't want to leave you hanging here because I got a call that I didn't expect here, and I want you to be, and I understand you're, did you hear Watanabe talk about Theo Watanabe talk about you being in Skokie? So you're a friend of Bee's as well, I assume.
I'd like to think I am.
I think you are. So, you know, you're the founder of Chicago Wilderness and a bunch of other things, and I would think that you are as well. But while we were talking about that, I got a phone call from Naaman Gamble, who runs he's the head beekeeper at Garfield Park Conservatory Alliance. So hang on just a second, Deborah. I want to bring in Naaman. How are you? Good morning.
I'm fine, Mike. Good morning. How's it going?
All right. I guess you were listening to the conversation we had with Theo and Debbie?
Yes, I was. Debbie's a beekeeper here, and as a beekeeper, I guess there's something inherent about not being in touch with the Twitter world. So I didn't see my Twitter feed until this morning at work and saw that you needed some beekeepers and you were going to have Debbie on, and thought I'd listen in, and had a great time doing so.
Well, what did we miss there that people need to know about bees and especially in terms of putting them into a suburban or urban area?
Yeah, since we have 20 hives here at the Garfield Park Conservatory, they are very much in an urban environment. And, you know, our major focus here at the program is teaching and educating the public about bees and helping new beekeepers out as well. But Debbie's been in our program and has been a stalwart of the program. And I think it was because, you know, she was in this program and had this background in education and talking to the public. You know, she was finally successful in getting Oak Park to see the error of their ways, I think.
Yeah, and as she said, it took a while, and it wasn't without a few restrictions on it, but they all seem more or less reasonable, don't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we do need to have some restrictions. It's funny to think that Chicago is kind of the wild west of beekeeping, where we don't have too much in place, which is kind of funny to think about. But yeah, having a few restrictions is understandable. And you know, really, you know, if we have to go just a little bit out of our way to kind of appease the public that is afraid of bees, then so be it. But I think, you know, what we need to do as beekeepers is, sing the praises of what honeybees do for us and pollinators in general.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that the woman who is the health, I'm going to find her name, Skokie Health Department, the director of the Skokie Health Department, she said, according to her studies, it didn't seem as though urban and suburban beekeeping was really helping the situation in terms of the decline of the bees. I'm trying to imagine how it's not, but
yeah. I find that difficult to believe at some extent. Having bees in an urban environment, I think we've seen is pretty beneficial because bees don't have to deal with the same pesticides that most rural beekeepers have to deal with.
Yeah, that's true. Because I have found in the city, most people aren't using that stuff, either because they don't, there aren't the lawn pesticides, there aren't the flower pesticides. I think urban gardeners tend to be a little more relaxed about that sort of thing.
Yeah, I would tend to agree as well. Just to kind of show that some of the kind of regulations that we as beekeepers have to follow in the state of Illinois are a good thing. By being registered with the Illinois State Department of Agriculture with our beehives, we'll actually get notified if there's going to be some spraying going on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to portray that this is a Oak Park and other suburbs that have put in these laws are kind of, big brother on us, but we do have some really good laws in effect that are designed to help bees and beekeepers. So, I want to make that clear as well.
Well, let me bring something in, and Deborah, you might be able to help us on this as well. Deborah Shore is also on the line with Naaman Gambill, and he is the head beekeeper at the Garfield Park Conservatory. One of a topic that we almost did this week and we might do next week, Carol Becker has been working on it, is because I've had a number of people write to me about the city coming out and spraying for mosquitoes.
Yeah.
And those pesticides, and I did a little research on the pesticides they use, and I don't have the name of the one right in front of me. I should look that up. But it's apparently they use it in very low doses, as they tell you, and they say that it is not that toxic. They certainly, they tell you it's not toxic to humans. However, if you want to close your doors and hide your kids, that's another matter. Feel free to do that. It seems a little contradictory to me about that. And it's called Zenovex. That's it. I found it. Zenovex. And it's and if you look at the MSDS, which is the material safety data sheet, you find that it is indeed quite toxic to bees. And yet, so we've made a calculation as a society that we need to spray for West Nile virus because this is a huge problem. And we don't want people to get West Nile virus, even though most people who get it don't even know they have it. Yes, some people die from it. Some people die from bee stings. As I pointed out earlier, people die falling off ladders. The problem is the collateral damage, as it seems to me, is that these sprays are indeed toxic to bees. Now, do you worry about this at all, Naaman, when they do spray? Have they done spraying in the area of Garfield Park?
I personally have not seen any trucks spraying. I would imagine since we're so close to the lagoons in Humboldt Park and, these great areas in Chicago that are to some extent still, wild or are definitely attracting more nature, that they would spray these areas. I haven't seen them personally. Of course I'm good. I think every beekeeper will tell you that they love their bees and that they, fear every time there's a cold snap in winter, there's a drought in the summer and the city sprays or any municipality sprays. So, I'm definitely worried and concerned about it. Now, I'm hoping that the city is doing the spraying at night or dusk, like they're supposed to. and as a beekeeper, you have to hope, quite a bit in just about everything you do. But, hopefully they're doing that at dusk when the bees aren't as active, but it's bound to happen that pesticide's going to, find its way to a bee, and it's going to eventually, if it touches one bee, it's going to touch, up to 60 to 80,000 bees once it gets back into the hive. So,
mm-hmm. And that is indeed the problem. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I'm going to let you go because I want to talk to Deborah, but I appreciate you calling. Any final words you want to say about bees and beekeeping?
You know, I would encourage if anyone is a little bit, you know, hesitant about being around bees or a little skittish about them, I encourage them to talk to a beekeeper and get educated. Come to the conservatory. We do public hive openings and education 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and here in about 45 minutes, so on Sunday. So come out, talk to a beekeeper, be around the bees, and we'll tell you all the great things that they do and why we need to have them around.
And the website for the Garfield Park Conservatory Alliance is?
You can go through the park district and go to garfieldparkconservatory.org. And we're the sister organization that's trying to tell people all the great things that the conservatory does here. So you can find us there. Shoot me an email at ngamble@garfieldpark.org.
And it's N is in Novak, Gamble, G-A-M-B-I-L-L, right?
Correct.
Okay. Great, Nathan. It's great to talk to you, and I appreciate you listening and calling in and contributing to the conversation.
No problem, Mike. You folks take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Deb, you still with me?
I sure am.
You know, you guys, because you're the Water Reclamation District, obviously are dealing with water and issues. But I assume that it's municipalities and not your organization that is concerned with mosquito control.
Correct.
So do you enter into that territory at all, or is that just something that you leave alone?
We don't enter into it directly. I mean,
You're controlling, not controlling, but you know, you're interested in systems that are going to work for better water, stormwater management in the area. So if you've got stormwater and it's standing, obviously you're going to have mosquito issues.
That's true. And so in two ways, our agency, the Water Reclamation District, sells rain barrels to residents of Cook County, and those are designed to capture rain from your roof so you can use it to water your lawn, your garden, wash your car, and they are designed in a way so that mosquitoes can't lay eggs, and so they're very safe. But in the larger picture, we manage stormwater on the landscape, and so how can we promote ways to manage rain that don't leave it standing for periods of time enough to allow mosquitoes to propagate.
The reason that you're on the show today, and again, we're talking to Deborah Shore, who is a commissioner with the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, you sent out an email the other day that I happen to know, actually one of your newsletters, I guess. And it's about a draft ordinance for a watershed management ordinance to establish uniform stormwater management regulations across Cook County. Why don't we have those now?
Good question, Mike. But the Water Reclamation District got authority from the Illinois General Assembly in late 2004 for stormwater management for all of Cook County. So it's a relatively new part of what the Water Reclamation District does. Prior to that, Cook County government had that authority and just frankly wasn't doing much with it. And so it took a number of years to persuade the legislature to shift that authority. Since they've done so, the Water Reclamation District has commissioned six detailed watershed plans for each of the six major watersheds in Cook County. It's begun to spend millions of dollars on projects to try to reduce flooding in some areas and repair stream bank erosion. And now we have this draft ordinance that's been several years in the making to set standards across all the municipalities in suburban Cook County. Many already have their own stormwater ordinances, but at least a third of them do not. So this is attempting to set some uniform standards to establish a fair and level playing field, as it were, and also to try to not make flooding problems worse.
that when development happens in one part of a watershed, it doesn't increase flooding problems downstream.
And you point out, before I get to that, question I have for you is, and I don't want you to get too arcane about this, but I think it's fascinating that you said Cook County is part of six different watersheds. Now, obviously, that's because when you draw political boundaries, they're not necessarily geographical boundaries. Could you kind of outline where those watersheds are?
Well, they really are along the major waterways, the Des Plaines River, the North Branch of the Chicago River, Salt Creek, Poplar Creek, those sorts of things.
Okay.
And those watershed plans are on the district's website. They're very detailed, but they're accessible to anyone.
And by the way, yeah, if you want to go to the website, that is mwrd.org, www.mwrd.org. And on the website, you can also track down the draft ordinance. I realized last night, or this morning, actually, when I was trying to link on it, that the link doesn't work. So, Kathleen, if you're listening, would you find the draft ordinance and make that link work on MikeNovak.net this week's show? Because some people might want to read that. And I was looking at it this morning here at the station, and you want people to comment on it, obviously, which means that if they're going to comment on it, they're going to have to read through it. It requires some citizen participation, doesn't it, Deborah?
It does, Mike, but I'm happy to report that the district is in the process of putting up a summary of the ordinance, and there will be a FAQ sheet and a question and answer part to our website very soon so that people can post their questions and answers will be put up by our professional staff. And there are three more public meetings scheduled if people want to come and comment on the ordinance or learn more. And those meeting dates are also on our website, but they're Monday, August 5th, Wednesday, August 7th, and Thursday, August 8th in different parts of Cook County, Chicago Ridge, Mount Prospect, and East Hazelcrest.
And I've got those on my website. I pop that on there. In fact, if you want to make written comments, excuse me, I'm suffering from a little bit of a cold here. You can write to Catherine O'Connor, Director of Engineering at the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District, 100 East Erie Street, Chicago 60611. Again, that information is there, and I also have the link to the email if you want to send that in. And I'm glad you're doing the summary because your document is 159 pages long. You can't realistically expect folks to slog through that and then show up at a meeting. I mean, I'm sure some people do, but as I mentioned earlier, citizen participation also requires some effort on the part of the government to reach out.
Right.
And I'm glad that you're going to, when's the summary going to be available?
This week, I hope.
I hope so too. All right. And now I do have a question for you. It was sent by one of my listeners and posted on Facebook. And he wrote, let me see here. Ask Deb Shore why climate change was not in the list of considerations made when developing the ordinance. And I looked at that and I went, that's interesting. So I typed in climate change, did a search of your document, and it did not pop up. Why is that?
Well, we received statutory authority for stormwater management from the General Assembly and, have to comply with that authority. Climate change is certainly of concern at our agency, and it is infused in many other things we're doing. And while not explicitly mentioned in the ordinance, by setting standards for new development and redevelopment on parcels of a certain size in Cook County, we're requiring those property owners or developers to capture more rain on site and allow it to infiltrate into the ground or release more slowly into area rivers and streams. And that is certainly an attempt to deal with the changing nature of rain events that we're seeing. But it can't address the more intense, very large rainstorms that we've seen in the last few years.
Well, I would ask why. I mean, that if that is the new norm, why are we not trying to figure, or are you saying that those events are just beyond the capacity of any municipality or organization to deal with?
No, not necessarily, but I am saying it may beyond the scope of this particular ordinance. We are doing a lot of other things within our stormwater authority and at the agency to address these changing rainstorms. We're going to be putting more money and effort into promoting green infrastructure. That is green roofs, rain barrels, rain gardens, permeable pavement, a suite of ways to capture rain where it falls and slow the flow into our sewers. We're also going to be doing more in terms of other capital projects to try to address flooding throughout the county. And we're going to be working with every municipality to develop their own stormwater plan. So there's a lot of other things we're doing. This ordinance is to address redevelopment and development on parcels of a certain size so that we try not to add to the current flooding we're seeing.
We're talking to Deborah Shore, who is commissioner of the Metropolitan Water Reclamation District. One of the things you pointed out in this newsletter that you sent out that I was kind of fascinated by is the definition of what a 100-year storm is. And you say, and I was surprised by this because I was ignorant. I did not know this. You wrote, when we refer to the 100-year storm, we mean there is one chance in 100 or 1% that a storm of that magnitude will happen every year, not that such a storm will happen once every 100 years. So a 25-year storm event means that there is one chance in 25 or 4% that such a storm will happen every year.
That's right.
That's interesting. What's the practical application of that?
Well, first and foremost, it helps if we understand it. Secondly, even that data is based on some older rainfall records, and I suspect if we factored in the storms we've seen since 2008, that those percentages might change, or the definition in terms of the amount of rainfall for a 100-year storm might change. I'm not a statistician, so I can't come up with those numbers. But since 2008, we've had four storms in Cook County that have been 5 inches or more. We've had two of the wettest years on record, and no local infrastructure can handle 3 inches in 3 hours, such as Glenview and some other neighborhoods experienced in late June. So even with green infrastructure and many things we may not be able to completely manage, those more intense, more localized rain events that we're seeing, we can turn a 4-inch rainstorm into a 2-inch rainstorm by capturing more water on site. And there's a lot more we can do to give our local infrastructure the capacity to try to deal with that.
You know, you mentioned that, and I think of having driven by some construction out at on Willow Road in Glenview the other day, and it makes me want to ask you, is that kind of new construction adhering to these newer concepts in how to deal with our stormwater? Are we moving forward, or are we still at a point where we're trying to teach our contractors how to do this right? Is it municipality by municipality?
Right now it is. Glenview has some good stormwater ordinances and pretty good standards, but some municipalities don't. That's why this ordinance is important, because it will establish a level playing field and be applied consistently across all of suburban Cook County.
I want to go into one other thing. This was a fascinating. I like your newsletters, by the way, Deborah.
Thank you, Mike.
I always find there's lots of information and usually stuff that I didn't know.
Well, anybody is welcome to subscribe. You can go to my website, deborahshore.org, and send us your email, and happy to add you to the list.
It's deborashore.org, and that link is also at mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show, and you'll see, when you see the words Commissioner Deborah Shore, that's where the link is. One of the other things you said you talked about another common misconception along the North Shore is the Wilmette pumping station and releasing stormwater. Explain what you were talking about.
So when the North Shore Channel was dug and completed in 1910 from a terminus at Wilmette Harbor, and it joins the north branch of the Chicago River 8 miles south, there was a gate structure built at Wilmette Harbor to, when the North Shore Channel fills up with stormwater, when it's 4.5 feet above the level of the lake, gates are opened at the harbor to release some of that stormwater to the lake to prevent flooding along North Shore communities. However, many people think that if those gates were opened sooner, it would prevent basement backups and flooding in parts of Wilmette and some other North Shore communities. That's not the case. Half of Wilmette or more doesn't even drain into the North Shore Channel. It's a separated sewer community. And so releases from the North Shore Channel have no effect on the local infrastructure in Wilmette and Glenview and so forth. When that water is released is done by agreement with the Army Corps of Engineers, and we can't open the gates any sooner because we don't want lake water flowing into the channel and causing even worse problems.
We're talking to Deborah Shore, who is commissioner at the Water Reclamation District of Greater Chicago. I wanted to bring up something before I let you go that you and I discussed briefly when you agreed to be on the show. And last week I had filmmaker Ed Brown on, who just released, had the Chicago premiere, actually, of Unacceptable Levels, which is a documentary film that I really think that folks should see if you're not aware of the varied kinds of toxins that are in our environment and how they get there. And he goes through a wide range of things. It's not just pesticides. It's all kinds of things in our substances, in our water, in our air, in our soil, in our food, on and on and on. And, of course, I'm aware of these things, as I know you are, Deborah, because these are things that you've followed for many, many years. One of the things he talks about is what he calls toxic sludge, in which people in the business, that is to say your business and mine to some degree, call biosolids. Now, he claims that changing the name to biosolids is a way to sort of clean up the image of sludge. And there are, I know that if Water Reclamation District, you have to deal with this because we create a lot of waste. For instance, an advertiser on my show, Milorganite, deals with biosolids. And they fry the stuff, you know, they burn it and they purge it of toxins. Heavy metals was an issue in the past, and they've gotten rid of that. Pathogens. And I've said in the past, and I think you and I agree on this, Deborah, that we have to find a solution because we create a lot of waste. And we in the old days, as you know, and I mentioned it last week, we used to dump it in the oceans. We used to put it in landfills, and that's just not acceptable. We have to find ways to mitigate this. What is the MWRD doing in that regard?
So Thanks. I agree with you, Mike, and I'm glad you brought up Milorganite, because I was going to. That is a product from Milwaukee's sewage treatment plant that sales began in 1926, and it's sold widely, and it's safe, and it's tested daily for the presence of any heavy metals or pathogens, and it's passed all tests. The Water Reclamation District here in Cook County also produces a similar product that's not sold commercially, but a pelletizer plant was constructed at our Stickney treatment plant to, under very high heat, treat some of the solid waste, and that high heat kills the pathogens. And so they will be having a product that won't be sold in Chicago, but can be used on golf courses, on athletic fields, and in farm fields, and so forth. The agency also produces what are called Class A biosolids, which means they pass all these EPA tests, and we, too, have labs that test our product daily. And the Class A is very high quality. It doesn't have the heavy metals, the pathogens in it. And we've been working with local park districts and others to apply it on athletic fields, golf courses. It's very high quality because it has a lot of nutrients in it, nitrogen and phosphorus.
I guess the question for a lot of people, and you know, you've been there, Deborah, you know, there's the crowd that would say, no biosolids, no way, no how, never. And my question to them is always, okay, what do you propose to do with them?
Right. Understand that the Water Reclamation District also has an industrial pretreatment program for many years where we've worked with industries in Cook County to treat various metals and other problematic industrial constituents on site so they're not entering the waste stream.
Yeah, you know, that's probably where to start. If we could get the stronger laws that would keep this from going into the water in the first place, we'd be in a lot better place.
Right.
And it's also a reminder to you folks who like to dump your pharmaceuticals into the toilet, don't do that. That's about the dumbest thing you can do, because that ends up in the water as well. And, you know, we're in a situation, I know that I've seen studies about the effect of pharmaceuticals on plants, and the jury's out. It's still out about what kind of effect they have on plants. But it is a concern. I'm sure it is for you too, isn't it?
Definitely. And it's something that I am working on. And we have participated in a number of pharmaceutical collection days sponsored by the Federal Drug Enforcement Agency. There are safe collection programs in many municipalities. You can go to the district's website to learn about them, but it's something we need to make more available, more widespread, our safe, secure collection programs for unused or expired medicine so people don't flush them down the toilet and so they don't accumulate in their homes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm glad that you talked about Milorganite, and I need to mention that they're a sponsor of the Mike Novak Show. And the reason they are is because I went to their plant. I did a tour of the plant and looked at how they were processing it. And they're kind of the gold standard about how to deal with biosolids. I want to thank you again. If folks want to get your newsletter, and as I said, it always has a lot of great information, go to deborahshore.org. I hope you keep me posted, Deborah, and you don't be a stranger and come back on the show soon.
Mike, you're a prince. Thanks for hosting me. It's been a pleasure.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Sometimes gardening is a lot like raising kids. You got to feed them, shelter them, water them, prune them. Well, I guess that's a kind of limited metaphor. But if you are a gardener, you should have a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. Every issue, the What to Do in the Garden column tells you what to do for your plants and exactly when. In the July-August issue, for instance, you'll learn that it's time to cut back catmint, bellflower, yarrow, coreopsis, and veronica, among others. and that it's time to divide your iris plants. They also tell you how to do it. Now is the time to plant your fall vegetable garden. Ding, ding, ding. Wait. Kohlrabi, leaf lettuce, turnips, collards, mustard greens, radishes, spinach, and Chinese cabbage can be seeded now. Get thee to it. As for your lawn, get ready to do overseeding starting in mid-August, since late summer is absolutely the best time to rejuvenate your lawn. Then there's my column on the inside back page. No matter what the time of year, it's pretty inappropriate. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, get a subscription. Go to chicagolandgardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Lisa Albrecht, you're trying to find how to sign up for her newsletter
because I think everyone should have her newsletter.
Deborah, you went to deborahshore.org?
No, I went to MWG.
No. Go. That's your problem.
There we go.
Okay. Go to deborahshore.org, and that will work. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Fall can be a good time to plant many species of trees, and now, as we are about a month away, a couple of months away from fall, it's the time to plan for that. When you do, think about diversity. In the past, we have seen serious problems arise when we have had too many of the same trees in the landscape. Think Dutch elm disease, and more recently, emerald ash borer. As ash trees are now abundant in the landscape, and many of those replaced the elms. You see a pattern here? So we get the elms. They get whacked by Dutch elm disease. We plant the ashes. The emerald ash borer wipes them out. I have a feeling the next one will be honey locust. You watch. Something will, because we plant honey locust, because it's a great urban tree. And then when the honey locusts start to go, we're all going to be very unhappy about that. So don't plant too many of the same trees. Several years ago, the U.S. National Arboretum proposed a 10-20-30 formula, which suggests planting no more than 10% of a single tree species, no more than 20% of species within any tree genus, and no more than 30% of the species with any tree family within a given area. Now, if you can't follow that, here's a simple rule. See what trees your neighbors have in their yard and then plant something else. It's pretty simple, really. Don't plant the tree because you like your neighbor's tree. Look at that tree and say, oh, I better get something else. And you can talk to a certified arborist about that at the Care of Trees. Call 800-508-9466 for a free consultation. 800-508-9466 or go to thecareoftrees.com. The Care of Trees, a Davy company. Their business is people and their love for trees. Don't mind me. I'm just hacking up a lung here. How are we doing with the contest? I think we have a winner, don't we?
I think we do on Facebook.
Who is our winner, Lisa?
John Hartman guessed 2,500. And the answer is, can I say?
Yes.
2568. Is that right?
Yep.
I wrote it down somewhere, but
I'm pretty sure.
Hold on. Here we go. Yep. 2568.
So
per minute.
Per
minute.
2568 plastic bags are given out in Chicago per minute.
So over the last couple of weeks, I've had conversations about this because of the debate in Chicago and the effort
in the city council, which is still going on, and I'm still working on it. And I'll be talking about it more on the show as we head into September, because probably that's when the next hearing will be.
Okay.
And, you know, I'll say this. We're dealing with city council. Mm-hmm. Not exactly the most enlightened group of people in the whole world.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, you walk into a room, and I've been working with folks on this, and I'm part of this committee that's sort of behind the scenes trying to move
get
it forward.
Forward.
Yeah. There's people from different disciplines here, and we're all trying to make this happen. And then there's the reality of what, you know, the questions that get asked, well, what does Rahm think? What does Rahm think? You know, it's not a matter of whether it's good policy or not. It's what does Rahm think?
What I'm finding is actually taking a step back that talking to my friends, they don't see plastic bags as a bad thing and don't understand.
What?
Yes.
Who are your friends?
No, I'm serious. Well, right. But I think a lot of people just don't stop to think. They find them a convenience, but they don't understand just the environmental impact. You know, some people said, well, can't we make them out of different materials? I said, well, can't you carry a reusable
yeah,
bag?
Really?
But that concept was very foreign. So I think we've got a lot of educating to do. You'd think we'd be there now. I know a couple years ago, farmers markets, they tried to ban plastic bags at farmers markets. People said, oh, that'll impact my sales. I won't be able to, you know, do a good job. But I mean, if we can't get that community to bring their own reusable bags, we've got some work to do here.
Yeah, we do. But back to our winner.
Yes. John Hartman.
John Hartman, who is going to be going on. Now, John, make sure you can go on this tour, dude.
And how should we have John, can you call into the station right now? So we can get your contact info.
Yeah, let's get the contact. Call.
We have you on Facebook.
773-763-9278, and we'll take care of that. And he'll be going on the Down on the Dumps tour August 10th. We'll probably give away two more tickets next week. So those of you who are just itching to look at the dumps in the southeast part of the city, which is very educational, and I think
it should be field trip for all schools.
I think so, too.
I mean, that's part of the problem is that you know, same thing with the plastic bags. You take it from your house to your garbage can and then it magically disappears. And it's not part of our world and our environment to understand where our garbage is going and what's happening to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ashley Williams is standing by to talk about her petition to Governor Quinn. We'll get to her in just a second.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I don't want you to be left out. Here's what I'm talking about. Each month, more people turn to Natural Awakening Chicago to improve their lives than any other health or wellness magazine. If you're a green, natural health, or wellness business, you should be part of the leading sustainability resource in the country. Natural Awakenings is packed with information that our readers use to find the products and services they need to live happier, healthier lives. Natural Awakenings is available for free each month throughout the city and north and northwest suburbs. We're placed in more than 1,100 area locations, ensuring the right eyes read about your products and services. We're also online at nachicagonorth.com. We're local, we're independent, and our readers will help you grow your business. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. That's 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Thank you, Peggy Malecki. You know, Peggy says that because of those spots, people see her at places where, you know, she'll do an event and she'll be at the Natural Awakenings booth and people go, oh, you're the woman on the radio. Yeah. I hear you on the radio.
Yeah.
She goes, hi, I'm Peggy.
I've seen her. I bump into her all the time at Women in Green, which is a fantastic, look for us on Facebook, look for them. Mm-hmm. I'm part of the group, but not an organizer. Deborah Weigert, tons of just amazing environmental women gather together once a month to network. Okay. I'll post that on the website, Women in Green.
I think you should. All right. The Fulton Street Flower and Vegetable Garden are proud to present Christy Weber with their first ever Golden Shovel Award.
Oh, and Christy Weber's part of it, too. Women in Green.
Oh, mm-hmm. Doesn't surprise me.
Deborah Shore, do you name,
of course.
You name women in environmental movement there in it? Sorry, wrong gender.
What?
You don't have the required parts.
Discriminatory. All right.
We need our playground.
But there's no men-only organizations in the world.
I know, sorry about that.
Anyway, Christy Weber may have received a lot of accolades over the years, but recognition from hardworking gardeners like Sam and Angie Taylor really means something. head to Christy Weber Landscapes' Facebook page. Just go to Christy Weber Landscapes on Facebook and see the grin Christy's wearing while she shows off that award. She deserves to be proud. But don't dawdle in front of your computer all day. Echinacea is the perennial of the week at the Farm and Garden Center, which means that when you buy three, you'll get one free. Echinacea is hardy, drought-tolerant, and blooms from now until fall. Remember that anytime you buy native plants at Christy Weber's Farm and Garden Center, you can claim your City of Chicago Sustainable Backyards rebate right at the sales counter. Christy Weber Landscapes right in your backyard, and she's got bees on the roof of Rancho Verde, which is her headquarters. So
over by Chicago Center for Green Technology?
Yep.
She's got a lot of things going on. She's got solar, she's got wind.
Yep.
She's one active lady.
You know, that's a great building, and it's a LED building.
It's a LEED building, and they do not have natural gas to heat the building. They're using geothermal supported by solar thermal.
Pretty cool stuff.
Passive solar to keep the windows, you know, cooler in the summer and sunshine in the winter.
And another reason to go to ChristyWeber.com in 30 seconds.
She walks the talk.
That she does. We'll talk to Ashley Williams.
Spending more time at home these days? Give yourself some room. Renovate your basement or attic. You'll increase your living space and your home's resale value, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling needs, including additions, renovations, and other home improvements. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Unchain my heart, baby, let me go. Unchain my heart, 'cause you don't love me no more.
I just found out that is our winner of the tickets to the tour. It is John's birthday today, John Hartman. Happy birthday, John Hartman.
Wow, how totally cool is that?
Did you go to the Facebook part? You know, you got to verify with Facebook.
Well, I did not do that, but
I mean, if you just clicked on the name, it would tell you pretty much, wouldn't it? That people are wishing him happy birthday.
Yeah, that's what he said. He seemed like an honest guy.
All of my listeners are honest people. Most of them, anyway. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Let's bring in Ashley Williams. Ashley, good morning. How are you?
Hi, good morning, guys. I'm doing great.
I am so pleased to have you on the show. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, I haven't been covering the Starved Rock issue very much recently, even though I know there have been things going on. There have been meetings about barge terminals there in the area and how those are going to affect the frac sand. We know that the case itself is still wending its way through the courts. And as soon as I have any information about that, I will announce it. But in the meantime, I found out this week that you live in Ottawa, right?
Yes.
So you're in the neighborhood. You put together a MoveOn.org petition to send to Governor Quinn. Tell me about it.
Okay. So, I started it on May 27th of this year. Currently I have over 16,000 signatures from across Illinois, across the U.S., even the world. And I mean, the outpouring of support has just been so tremendous. And yeah, we're planning on Wednesday at 1 p.m. We're all going to be meeting in front of the James R. Thompson Center, and we're going to be hand delivering my petition. Being that I've been trying to get a meeting routinely for the past 2 months with the planner, one of his environmental liaisons, but I haven't, you know, been met with any success. So we have an upcoming delivery, and I'm just so excited. The two demands that we're going to be making is that the IDNR Office of Mines and Minerals, their reclamation permit grant to Mississippi Sand be revoked, and that state standard for silica and ambient air be, you know, set, because there is currently no federal or state standard for silica and ambient air. And then moreover, you know, most importantly, is that a statewide moratorium for fracking and frac sand mining be enforced. But
mm-hmm. Certainly the first place we have to start is with the mine that's being proposed for right outside of Starved Rock. That just is, it's an insult. It's a slap in the face, basically, to the citizens of Illinois. And I have to admit, I'm kind of honked off at the governor who has said nothing about this so far. And which is why I'm glad you're there. You're sort of following in the footsteps of Abby Goldberg, who did the plastic bag signatures. Now, she got 150,000, I guess, close to 200,000 signatures last year. And there's no reason why you can't get that many. I'm going to urge people to sign this petition. I signed it last night, and the link to it is on my website, MikeNovak.net. So if you scroll down on this week's show to where it says the Starved Rock Battle Continues, you can link to the petition and sign it. And I hope that I hope you get a Mike Novak bump today on the petition.
I truly hope so too.
Well, I say that kind of tongue in cheek. I am not Stephen Colbert. Okay. don't hurt me now. Don't hurt me. I am so glad you're doing this because I think it's time, you know, and I know it's wending its way through the legal process and there are other issues. And, my kudos to the environmental groups like Illinois Sierra Club that are doing this battle and Open Lands and the Prairie River Network and those folks who are working hard on it. But we need more people like you to step up, Ashley, and, you know, and as you said, the governor's probably not going to be there. He's ducking out. you don't expect to see him, but I'm sure you're trying to get some media and trying to get some folks, and so I urge people to show up at the James R. Thompson Center at 1 o'clock on Wednesday.
Yes. July 31st.
Are you meeting now? Are you meeting outside or in the governor's lobby or where?
We will be meeting outside because I was talking to my friend Laura Chamberlain of SAFE, and she was saying that the best idea was definitely to be, you know, meet outside because we're going to get thrown out of the lobby. Because I'm not sure. I got about maybe 17 RSVPs so far, but that's not counting, you know, all the people I have working with me, you know, trying to recruit people. We're gonna meet outside so they didn't throw us out right away.
Well, you know, it's the kind of thing where you hear it all the time on this radio station where Tom Hartman says, get active. Norman Goldman is always saying, do something, you know, get out of your chair. And this is one way to do it. And you've certainly done it in spades with the petition. And we need more people to put pressure on the governor. And, you know, and maybe the attorney general, too. Who knows what Lisa Madigan's up. You know, she was running for governor. Now she's not. You know, if she's not running for governor, then, well, then let's pay attention to this issue. Now that your mind is not off of running for governor, or your mind is off of running for governor, let's address the Starved Rock issue and let's get something done. You know, I and the people who are following the proper channels are probably going, oh, you know, stop agitating this way. You know what? The governor has a huge say in this. The attorney general has a huge say in this, and they can make some waves. And that's why I'm so glad you're doing this, because I think the governor in particular, who has touted himself as an environmental governor, needs to step up and finally say something. But this is absurd that this thing would even be proposed next to Starved Rock State Park.
Oh, absolutely. So we're going to be printing out a stack of signatures actually for Lisa Madigan as well.
Oh, good.
So she's actually going to be added to the list as one of the targets. So, yeah, this is a new decision. But, yeah. Where we're definitely going to drop off a stack for her as well.
Aside from the fact, and this is Ashley Williams, lives in Ottawa, aside from the fact that you live nearby, how do you think this frack sand mine is going to affect you?
Well, first of all, there's, you know, the noise, there's the traffic, there's the air, there's the light pollution, you know, that are huge factors. ADM is Archer Daniel Midland. They're going to be their truck fleeting, their transportation partner. And they're going to be, on their own estimates, it's going to be about 80 to 100 trucks per day going through our town. And this is about, if they get these recommendations that the board had made, the plan commission rather had made, it's restricting their hours from 7 to 7 weekdays and then from 7 to 12 on Saturdays. So they're going to be routinely transporting the sand. Mississippi's sand, their operations is going to be 24/7. A huge factor is, you know, this problem that there is no federal or state standard for silica and ambient air. I mean, it's one thing when it's in the ground, it's intact in that St. Peter sandstone, but it's when it's wafting up in that air is when, you know, it's especially, you know, a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we've also had since the 1860s, you know, mine at U.S. Silca first moved in the 1860s, and, you know, they've been here ever since. And we have Illinois Silica that just moved in, you know, and it's just, it's so problematic. And, you know, I think there was even a man at the meeting who thought that he had possibly, he was seeing the doctor, but he thought he possibly had silicosis from this. And, but yeah, it's just, it's a huge problem with you know, silicosis
and
cardiovascular disease and lung cancer. And,
Right. It's the stuff we just don't think about. And because, as you said, it's not been regulated. Well, I'm going to thank you so much. I want people to go to my website, Mike Novak. I didn't mean to do that loud. Because that's I meant the closing music to go down there. Go to MikeNovak.net this week's show and sign the petition. It says Governor Quid, stop the Mississippi sand frack sand mine near Starved Rock. Ashley, keep me posted on this and we'll talk again soon.
Oh, sure thing. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, have a great Sunday.
You too, bye.
Bye-bye. See, this music is in honor of Rob, who's not even here because he wanted us to play this at the end of every show, and I finally hit it right. Well, anyway, all we got to say is go green or...
Go home.
Go home.